Hey, this is V-Man, and you're listening to Behind the Vinyl. Isn't this what you came here for? Isn't this what you
came here for? And, where are you now?
I think we just got to... Where do we... Where are we? I don't know. Sacramento. There you go.
All right.
Oh, nice.
I saw the other day you're in like Albuquerque or something. All these,
the last week's just kind of been like
all over the place.
Which is the traveling circus.
Yes, absolutely. And you were just in Sweden not too long ago in August. You played down in Malmö, which was a great show. Yeah. Really good show.
Yeah, I've never been. I don't think I've ever been to that end of Sweden before. It's always the top end.
Right. Yeah.
Well, you've always been.
Oh, sorry, what was that?
Yeah, you've been with Slipknot a few times. You were Crocodile a few times as well, right? Or at least once.
Well, no, Crocodile was one of those things where we got the album done and it was just as Slipknot were. I got inducted into it, but I had to keep everything a secret. So then as we were about to go and start touring, I think I had snuck off and I did Sonisphere or Download. It was one of those we played. And then that was it. And then Mastodon took Crocodile out. Right. And then they were like, why are you not on tour? And I was like, oh, because I joined Slipknot. So.
How did you end up on Slipknot's radar in the first place?
So, teching before, I used to work with Mastodon and many other bands. And I think it was, the long story was, I was guitar teching for Coed in Cambria. And I think it was like they did like four nights in the Astoria. And on the last night, some guy was doing some works outside the venue. He killed himself, blew the whole power to the whole block. So they had to cancel the show and postpone it to the next day. But their guitar tech couldn't do the show. So then my friend Johnny Phillips at the time was like, can you come do this Coed in Cambria show? So I've got that gig. And then I fixed loads of problems that the band had, but they said, don't touch anything. But that's who I am. I tried to fix everything. So I fixed all their problems. And then their production manager is a guy called Pete Stahl, who's in Scream.
Oh, dude, of course.
Yeah.
Rival Sons tour manager too.
Yeah. And he was just like, hey, you would want to come on tour with the band? I was like, yeah, sure. I was like, what tour are you doing? He's like, Slipknot tour. I was like, fuck yeah, this is great. So then we had to do like a whole visa process. Then I got the visa thing sorted. And then, the first tour was the All Hope Is Gone tour, 2008. And then that's when I met, like, Jim, and he heard me, like, shredding and stuff like that. And we just connected and became friends, gave me a guitar on the tour. And I pulled one out of his rack and was like, here you go, have that. And then I was, like, showing him some stuff. And, it was just like a back and forth. And I think that was after that we just stayed on each other's kind of, I'd always see him at shows or when they were touring again in Europe. And we just stay in contact. And I think, I got back from a Mastodon tour. I think it was in Australia we were. And I was at my tech, Darren, who's Troy's brother. Like, it was like 3 a.m. I got a call from like Jim saying, hey, do you know any bass players? And I was like, oh, what for? And he was just like, what for? And I was like, I'll do it. And then that was it. Then I spent like 5 days or something sitting on Darren's couch. I borrowed one of Troy's basses, just learned as much as I could, all like the hard songs, I didn't want to like just do like the easier stuff. And that was it. Got to the studio. I said, what song do you want to do? Then I caused like a big stink because the amp sounded like shit. And I was like, let's get another amp in. And they were like, oh, whatever. So then we had to wait half an hour. SIR or SRI, I had to drop another amp off that I wanted, set it up. And I was like, can't hear the drummer. So then they got me some wedges. And then, like, you could see everyone in the room was just like, fucking, who the fuck is this guy? And then that was it. And then I just was like, all right, first song, Heretic Anthem, let's do it. And then, yeah, that was it.
Wow.
Yeah. So I did like four songs and then they had a little chat. They're like, okay, we'll stick around. And I just kind of like hovered around the studio for like a week. They put me into the house where the whole band was staying and they were playing me some of the demos. And then one day Clown was like, right, let's have a chat. And then that was it.
Wow.
Very incredible.
A little bit of a journey to get there, but yeah. I mean,
yeah, that's the fast explanation right there.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that's the thing, you know, it's going all the way back, you know, to
yeah.
the story, do you know what I mean? And if I didn't do that one show, then I don't know if the chain of events would ever happen. I don't know. That's one of those things. Isn't this what you came here for? Isn't this what you came here for?
Five you played on, but you didn't write any music. Everything was done. So, firstly, congratulations on the new album. It's out now.
Yeah,
it's,
thank you. Yeah,
it's amazing. Yeah. We're gonna dig into that pretty deep in a sec. But this is basically the first album you've contributed writing, right?
No, We're Not Your Kind. I contributed a bit, like songs like Nero Forte was something that I wrote at home. Clown had sent me like a cadence, mm-hmm. and then like I just kind of moved some things around, and he was like, just keep it simple, just give it to me back. But then I sent it back like full drum programming, bass, guitar, and he was like, oh, okay. So then that kind of like started that whole relationship between me and him. And then Unsainted was another one, Spiders. And then there was a lot of the in-between stuff in between We're Not Your Kind. There was a lot of flowing interludes, and yep. that was stuff that Clown had his little room. And it was, you could just go in there and just mess around or play some whatever instrument you wanted to do, you know. We'd come up with melodies and... that was kind of like the first real creative aspect of being in the band, you know. So it was nice to be involved in that. And, you know, I feel like with Clown, like he wants to use, you know, what I have into what the band's got. And I come from a classical background. So like harmony and stuff like that was something. And rhythm as well. Like I just was trying to add my little little thing into it. So, you know, I did a bit of piano work, synths. I mean, there's even like whistling in there that we put through like a synthesizer and then we stretched it out, turned it into, you know, it was just, it was kind of like, you know, Pink Floyd stuff in the sense of like, you know, they're all sitting around just kind of like mad scientist stuff. You know? So, yeah, so that was fun.
But what's it like coming from like your previous band Crocodile and then into a big machine like Slipknot? It's got to be like a different world. Also working on music in a much bigger band like that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's one of those. Especially me, like working with other artists and being in like a teching environment and stuff, like knowing your place and knowing, you know, that there is a, you know, you're working for somebody, you're not just going in there and just, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know. So there's understanding that and understanding other people's, the way that other people work, and you have to, you know, form a relationship, and, you know, you can't just be, oh, I've got an idea, oh, I've got, you know, you got, it's nine people, you know, you can't just be, let's do this. So there, yeah, that was something that I had to, you know, I'd learned previously with working with other artists and stuff like touring, but you know that there is certain ways of doing things, and so I think I had a kind of a bit of a foot in the door with that one. You know, I wasn't just sitting in the corner just not saying anything, but still being respectful of everybody's, you know, place in the band and stuff. So.
for the end so far, you basically, from what I understand, you spent about 8 months with Clown riding, riding a lot with him. Was it predominantly just you and Clown by yourselves, like carving out a lot of the material, and then you'd say send it off to Corey to lay the vocals over the top?
Well, it started like it was just the COVID thing and being at home. I was like, right, I'm going to get back into Pro Tools and stuff. So I came over with like 4 songs that were, you know, pretty well structured. I mean, some aspects have changed now, but, you know, it's pretty much the fundamentals of what the song was. So like Dying Song, Warranty, Chapeltown Rag, we'd get that, and then, you know, being with Clown and stuff is like, oh, okay, why don't we try this? Why don't we try that? And, you know, it just kind of, we just kept growing and growing those type of things. And then Jim came over for a bit, Jay popped over for a bit. And then we'd sent some stuff off to Corey, and then all of a sudden we got all these melodies and vocals and stuff like that. And I was like, a lot of them, I was like, whoa, I didn't know we were, that's the direction we were going. Because like the earlier demos were more... So then him adding that, it was like, right, well, I didn't know we were going that. So then I would move stuff to change with that, you know, and then the song just kept growing and growing. And then Mike was a big help, the Tortilla Man. Yep. He's another, like, he's super musician, that guy. Like, it was just, you know, we had Clown's studio downstairs, and it was just every day we'd just be working constantly. And then, like, you know, Clown would have to do like business stuff, and then he'd pop down a little bit later on and then hear what we'd been doing. And so it's good. We had our good friend Grizz, who's on the road with us, played in the band Finch. He's our assistant, but he's also the Pro Tools master. So he was like, you know, instead of me just sitting there with a trying to play guitar or play bass or trying to do something, he's there with the mouse doing everything. So we just like, right, let's do this idea quick. So it was it became like an oiled machine by the end of it, you know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we left Iowa with pretty much the fundamentals of the album, you know? And then, you know, Joe Barisi got it, and it went from there.
Well, Jim Roots recently said that because of the COVID restrictions and all of that the last couple of years, that he thought that you didn't get to use Joe to his full extent. Do you agree with that, or would it have been a different album if it hadn't been the COVID restrictions and all of that?
I think fundamentally, like the way that the what we had and what we gave to Joe and stuff to work with, I don't think, you know, that if we had more or less time, the songs would have changed, if you know what I mean. I don't think that they would, you'd have a drastic difference. I think if we had more time, say in the studio, and we did it beforehand and we were not so separated, you know, because I couldn't even get into the country, you know, I had to go through loopholes to do that, you know. So it was trying to, you know, actually have a structured thing, whereas previous records, it's like we sit around the studio, we working stuff out. I think that's probably maybe where he was coming from. Whereas opposed, it was you're in a studio, here's music. You know, it's like, because, you know, there is no, you know, it's like, I think the studio was so locked down as well. It was, you couldn't even sneeze without like someone being like, you know, there definitely was, you know, oh, we had to be finished by a certain time, you know. So it was, I think that's maybe what he was kind of coming at. But I mean, Right. Everyone has their own different views on how it went. I mean, I slept on the floor for 4 months in Clown Studio until I got an actual bed. So, you know, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? There's different ways you could look at how the album was created.
Yeah.
It must be a bit of a culture shock to you, being the only British person in the band, only non-American in the band.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I've recently kind of connected very well with Justin Chancellor, and it's always funny how I was just like with like the two Brits, but yeah, it's I don't know. I mean, I feel like because the band's been such a big entity for so long around the world, that I don't think it was too much of a, you know, it's like, oh. But I definitely, there's definitely days when like my mouth gets the best of me, and some people are like, they're a bit confused. They're like, is he being serious? And I was like, no, I'm British. I'm just sarcastic constantly. So. And I have to reiterate that I'm only messing around.
Say that my absolute favorite track on the album is Adderall, which okay, is yeah, quite a different thing for Slipknot, I would say, but it's just a beautiful piece.
So that song started off, Clown played that to me, and it was just Clown, Mike, and Corey. And it was a completely different, I mean, the vocals are the same, mm-hmm. the essence of the song is the same, but it was just not what you hear now, you know. And then all of a sudden it was just like Clown plays drums on that song. And that just that simple beat. And then we was just like, we just kept pushing it. And Joe was, I think we moved out of Henson Studios and we went to Joe's place up in Pasadena. And it was a really cool studio because it's super, it's like all of his gears everywhere. It's like going to a museum, but I just feel like very inspired being there. And he had like all these old vintage bass, P basses, and it was just like, right, come on. I think actually I borrowed Justin's on that one, actually. Yeah, I did. And we were just messing around, and I was just like, I feel like we should get maybe, you know, go somewhere else with this, you know, and that was it. And it was just like, put that bass line in, and then Sid puts his stuff, and it just kind of kept growing and growing. And then, you know, I didn't listen to it for ages, and then I heard the first mix, and I was just like, and I was like, wow. I love that song, and it's just, I think it's one of those things where every now and then I'll get a text message from someone saying, being like, dude, I thought I was listening to like Elbow or something like that, you know, and I'm like, that's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of it, someone being like, oh, I just put on a Slipknot record on it. So. Now it's a shame, but I gotta stay, 'cause I like it here. I know it's the same, it happens every day, but I like it here. I know it's a shame, but I gotta stay, 'cause I like it here. I know it's the same, it happens every day, but I like it here. I like it here. The sentiment, the sad things, the punishment, the bad things, the cellular, the solenoid, the outer reach.
Ah!
Well, that this record very much, and it kind of bookends it too with Finale at the end, starting with
for sure.
It kind of takes you on this journey, and then you kind of land back there again, you know, from World to Finale. I think those over here in Sweden reviews and that it's that's the thing that's kind of sparked a lot of people's attention, that it's not a, you know, there's some heavy bits and there's some really heavy bits, but it's maybe a lot more melodic, you know, and it's a lot more diverse for songs like this.
Definitely. I never saw the actual finished set order of it until quite towards the end. And when I finally listened to it in the order, I was just like, that totally makes sense, you know? And I think with nowadays with a lot of records, you kind of get to like track 6 or 7, they've put everything in that, you know, the meat and potatoes are there, and then you get to the end of the songs, and it's just, you know, it's not like a cohesive thing, you know. And I said this before in the interviews, I was like, you know, the album, to put it on from start to finish, and I think you get this, like you're saying, like there's a flow of, and they're all interconnect some way.
Yeah.
I think, and there's also a lot of connection between that and We Are Not Your Kind. I think like the interludes may be turned into like the actual song melodies in a sense, you know?
Right. I got to ask, I mean, the first ever show you played, what was it like playing in a mask and that outfit? Was it claustrophobic in any way or?
Oh, yeah, it was horrible. It was horrible. It was a... I was all like cocky and I was like, yeah, I got this. It's fucking easy. And then I just remember walking on and then I just have in-ears in. I never used in-ears. And I was just like, ugh. It doesn't matter how many weeks of pre-production we did. It was, you go on stage, you see the crowd and all of a sudden the fucking pyro is going, and I'm just like, ah. It's just a bit of a surreal experience. But, you know, I think it was after the fourth or fifth song, I'm like, the brain's like, right, you've got a thing to do here. So started concentrating a bit more as opposed to just being like, fuck. Yeah. But that's the thing, like nowadays it's like, it's like complete opposite. It's like my in-ear mix is just me and Jay, a bit of Corey in the middle, you know, and that's it. I'm just in I'm just like in my own little, I get enough because the wedges are quite close for the guitars, so I can still hear something there, but mainly it's just me and Jay, and I just try and lock in as tight as I can. It's complete. If I was to have the mix that I had back in the day to now, I'd be like, probably have a panic attack.
You're the sin that I've been waiting for. Hands around my throat, it's all I can think about. The smell of sweat and blood. I would feed you all my pleasures just to drown in all of yours. Have you heard of me? Are you hurting me? Let me savor what I'm waiting for. A chance to make me choke. You're all I can think about. The taste is red and rust. Can I hold you in my mouth until I fade into this form? Can you cover me?
I wanna.
So Nick likes Adderall, which I think is amazing as well. Probably my favorite song on the record is Yen. You know, for some reason, I'm honing into Yen a lot. I think that's an amazing song. Do you want to talk us through that a little bit?
Yeah. So that was another one. So on the road, we have our own little Pro Tools system that we'd go in there and we'd all like jot down ideas. If someone's got an idea or, you know, you just want to noodle around on a beat, just go on the computer, press record, plug in whatever you wanted to do, and that's it. And it was me, Corey, and Mike. We were messing around one day and I was playing that bass line. Boom, 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 boom. And then Corey put this like melody in. And then Mike put some little synth timbali in it. And then all of a sudden that was it. I think we called it Cardiff Quarantine. And then it just got shelved and nothing happened. And then obviously I'm looking around. I started trying to think of stuff that we were doing. And I was like, oh, we had that fucking idea that I thought was really cool. So I took it and then, yeah, that was another thing. I worked at home and tried to build something around it, took it to Clowns. And yeah, once again, it was just another thing that just kind of just went toot, 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 layered and layered and layered. And then that section towards the end where it's just like me and Jay, and then there's like the haunting vocals and with the synth lines and the guitars are all clean. That was, you know, one of my favorite parts of that song. It's just, I feel like that in itself could be its own thing, you know. But yeah, and then Joe got hold of it, and then, you know, that guy's just a master and just sonically just turned something in it that was, you know, a demo to like this, you know, huge, you know, piece. And I remember the first mix of that, and I was just like, man, that's that's great. He did a very, very good job, Joe.
Did the you're talking synth and there's piano and all that. Are you playing that or is Mike? Because you play piano, right? Is that you on there or is it Mike on there?
No, so this time it was like if I had a piano idea or if I had the melodies, I would just be like, hey, Mike, or like that. Or I'd be like, hey, Mike, have you got any idea that you could put to that? And because when we were at Clowns, it was all just demoing and messing around with stuff. And then when we got to the studio, that's when we were like, all right, remember that idea we had here? Then that idea would then get passed on to somebody else or whatever. And maybe it wasn't a piano anymore. And now it's like a completely different instrument, you know? Yeah. So, but yeah, I think a lot of the ideas, I think just how I write myself is I either write piano or guitar and then I'll base stuff around that, just melody-wise, because I find that the piano is a lot more expressive than trying to sit there with a guitar trying to figure out how to...
Yeah!
I think one of the maybe the beauties of Slipknot and why there's so much longevity is because, like, you got a band that's 25 years old, but they're letting the two newer guys, you know, be creative and input into this. You know, the fact that they're letting Mike, you know, have such an impact, and even yourself have so much of an impact. That's probably one of the reasons why they're still around and they're still as relevant. Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a thought in my head where I'm just like, you know, like, say if I'm like writing a riff, and then I'm just like, is that somebody else's riff? Because of the level of the band, I think, you know, there's that thought in your brain where you're just like, so I think I constantly am overthinking of like how to do a riff or whatever a riff. And I was just like, well, it's a Slipknot, isn't it? So it's just like, well, if I'm going to take influence from somebody, I'm taking influence from the band that I'm in. Yeah. So if I look past on like rhythms that like Joey Jordison did and stuff like that, you know, a lot of when I was programming stuff, I would take actual old parts that he would do and I would chop them up and move stuff around. Just because, you know, what am I going to use as a basis for drums? Am I going to just take, Danny Carey for something? You know what I mean? It's not going to work because it's not Slipknot. So why not take what's the essence of Slipknot is and work around that, you know? So there's definitely ideas that have come from what Slipknot was and were and is evolving into what it is now, you know? It's refreshing to, you know, I've never worked with someone like Mike before, and I've never worked with Clown in a way where Clown's just like so brutally harsh. And you go, right, see that bit, chop it off. Get rid of it. And I'm like, oh, that bit's really good though. And he's like, no, just get rid of it. But then you work around what he just did, and then you're like, oh, okay. To see where his mind's at, you know. And I think that's kind of cool.
Well, I mean, what's the I think you're winding down on the tour right now, right?
But, yeah, we've got two shows left, yeah.
Yeah. What's the tour been like? So I just love the fact that you had to look at a piece of paper to find out what city you were in at the beginning.
Everyone always has a go at me because they're like, oh, because like, what, don't you know what you're doing? And I'm like, no, I'm here to play some music, and that's the only thing that's on my brain. So, you know, I don't know. It's one of those things. I should be a bit more organized, better in my life. But I just know there's a show tomorrow, and I've got to prepare for it. So nothing. So no shows are different or special. That you get the same level of.
Except the Swedish show, you put like 110% into that.
Oh, always 110%. Do you know what? It was really great to see Soil Work. I grew up listening to those guys, and I hadn't seen them for ages. And I was like, who's playing today? And I just ran straight to the stage, and I was like, I'm going to go, watch Soil Work. And, you know, that's just because I've got bad bookkeeping skills. So
they're a great band. I actually talked to the singer Bjorn today.
Oh, no, it's awesome. Yeah, very good band.
Yeah, very, very.
Read all about it if you want to know. Read all about what they want you to know. Everything has gone awry. And if this evil isn't this, this is no fucking trick.
Singles from the record, you must be pretty happy being a songwriter. The first two singles, Chapeltown Rag and The Dying Song. So they were two songs that you originally brought in those first batch of four.
So it's that one, Chapeltown, Dying Song, Warranty, and Yen. Yeah, they were
Yen was one of those four as well.
I was shocked at first when he was picking them, and I was just like, well, okay, fair enough. But, I would call them like my ode to what I'm in and what I'm a part of. And, just to see where those songs ended up and to work with someone like Joe to take like what my idea was of something and then for him to then just turn it into what he did. I think that's just like, it's just amazing for me to see that, and to be a part of that. And I'm super proud of what we achieved as a collective group on this record, because, without Sid's parts in it, without, Jim's guitars, mixed furious riffs and stuff like that. And I think that's just, that's what adding those aspects to whatever started off like here, to end up where it's at, I think that's what makes Slipknot its thing. Because if you take all those elements away, you're just left with, a basic riff and drums, and that's it.
Another big thing at Slipknot too is the visual element, especially with Clown, in regards to all the videos and so on and so forth. Did you get to have any input into? Or did he consult you in any way in regards to the video for these?
No, not at all. I mean, that's a Clown thing, It was, hey, here's the booklet. What do you think? I'm like, yeah, that's his realm. That's his baby. And, going to do the music videos and especially like Yen, like to see the concept of what he had planned and then to go and watch it. And a bunch of us all left. And then I was just like, well, I've got a flight tomorrow, so I'm just going to stick around anyway till late. And then it was me and Jim. We sat on the deck chairs looking over that pool with all the girls dressed up. And then all of a sudden there's like 100 extras all dressed up in masks. And I'm like, it's got some vision. It's really, and just to see him work and stuff was just like, pretty inspiring to see. So,
Does it take the song to a different level for you, even though you wrote it, you gave birth to the original idea? Does it take it to a whole different level for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's especially like the way, it's all very well. You get a piece of paper saying, right, this is how the video is going to be. And it's like, band does this, blah, 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 blah. But until you're there and you're in it and you see the way that he's had all the lighting set up and the way that the room, the location and, the mirror aspects and all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, it really does add another element to, it's its own entity almost, but it just emphasizes on, the song. So looking back and watching an old Pink Floyd, it's nice to sit there and listen to Pink Floyd, but sometimes when you watch like Live in Pompeii or something like that, like the visuals and that adds more to music, I think, especially, I think so.
song ideas, anything you worked on that got left out from the album?
Yeah, I mean, there's always stuff. There's always, you know, bits and bobs. But, you know, and I think, you know, what we took is what was the best for everyone, you know, for the project that we were working on, you know. You know, something like Dying Song was completely, you know, it was literally the front end of Dying Song just chopped off, you know. So it's funny when I listen back to the demo and I'm like, oh yeah, that whole bit got taken off. But it was just a longer verse and whatever, you know, but it was something that changed and we were in the studio and like, right, we'll just get rid of that. And we did it. And then Corey put the vocal in at the beginning and it was just like, there you go. Perfect. Sorted. So, you know, it's, you know, yeah, it's stuff like that, that just one person can't just sit around and conduct that, you know. It's everybody's got to have their input, and that's what makes it a great thing, you know. Because,
Are you the kind of person, will you hang on to that front bit, say, of the Dying Song? Is there something in there that you might pull out the next album?
No, that'll be something that I'd...
That's gone. Yeah. You're throwing it away. Yeah.
Well, it's not that it's thrown away. It's just that it's just not, I mean, it'd be either the same riff that comes on later on in the song, or, do you know what I mean? Like, there's too much of a similarity from that to that. Yeah. I think, you know, album to albums and stuff, there needs to be elements, like We Are Not Your Kind going into this album, there's definitely a bridge,
yep.
You know, but it's not that's that, and we're going to stick it into here, you know.
Yep.
So
cool. Hey, wait, I just want to ask you about your bass. It's pretty interesting. Oh, yeah. Bass. Does anyone in America know who Mark King really is?
Yeah, I heard they had a big hit back in the day. There's something about you. Yeah, apparently Jim said that was a big hit. That was like their only hit or something.
Right.
But no, I mean Muse plays his bass, the bass as well. I think I was struggling at the beginning to try and find a bass that I wanted to use live, and I'm a big fan of like carbon fiber, so I was just like, someone was telling me about Modulus, and I was just like, is there anything British? And then lo and behold, I was like, Mark King. Oh yeah, he uses Status Graphite. And then I got one, and I was just like, it's definitely a unique instrument in itself. You know,
yeah.
It's kind of like a wall bass almost, because it's the active electronics that are inside the bass are so unique to itself that it almost is the sound of the bass, you know. Cool.
And just lastly, because we got a couple of minutes left, how do you feel now you've worked with Jay for a couple of records and you guys kind of come in roughly, how do you guys feel intertwined? Are you guys super tight to the point is one of your favorite drummers you've ever played with?
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. It's like where we're at now, like in our, what you call it, in our careers together, where we're kind of like growing and playing off each other and stuff like that, you know. I don't even have to look at him anymore. Do you know what I mean? There's none of that on stage, or, you know, like people turn around and like, you know, I know where he's going to go, and I can, you know. And I think if I was to play with another drummer at the moment, it would just be like, it'd be so like alien to me, you know. But yeah, no, I mean, and that's the thing, like, you know, there's a true testament to him for the record and stuff, and, you know, some really fast bits in there, you know, and like in Yen as well, especially just towards the end, like the bass, guitar and drums together, you know, like it's a, yeah, that was awesome to be able to get to put that kind of style into the new record as well, so.
Thanks for your time, man. Great chat.
Bye. Thank you very much.
better know.